This episode of Datanauts is brought to you by IT Pro TV. Enhance your technology aptitude. IT Pro TV is the resource to keep your IT skills up to date with engaging and informative video tutorials. For a free 7-day trial and 30% off the life of your account, go to itprotv/datanauts and use the code datanauts30.
You've seen the meme, automate all the things. And for the most part, you can. In the data center of today, automating just about anything you want can be done with your choice of scripting languages, configuration management tools, and more. But networking has largely remained that blank whiteboard marker cloud, that unknown thing that hampers the known things of storage and compute. Why has networking been so far behind the automation curve? Why is the network such a difficult bit of infrastructure to automate? And what progress has the industry made towards fixing this poignant problem? I am Ethan Banks at EC Banks on the Twitters. My co-host Chris Wall joins me from the helm of a black helicopter, having just completed his secret Illuminati meeting of the week. Follow Chris's artisanal, handcrafted tweets at Chris Wall. Joining the Datanauts today to sketch in the details of that whiteboard network cloud is Jason Edelman. Jason, welcome to the show, and please introduce yourself to the Datanauts audience.
Thanks for having me. My name is Jason Edelman, as you said, and I'd like to admit that I have a problem. It is called network automation. My background is network engineering. My career has been traditional network engineering for the past decade plus, and for the past few years, I've been really, really focused on automating all the things.
Now, when you say you have a problem, does it mean you're hooked on it or it's just that hard of a problem to solve?
It could mean a bit of both, but initially my take is that I just have a problem, meaning I'm an addict.
Your disease is automation.
I got a fever, exactly. And the only prescription is more network automation.
Yes, exactly, exactly.
Well, Jason, let's open up the show with kind of level setting here. I set it up in the intro that network automation is hard, and for whatever reason, it's been harder than a lot of the other things that we've automated in the data center. First of all, do you agree with that?
I do. And again, you know, the past couple of years, I've spent a lot of time working with customers, you know, consulting on this and, you know, looking at different product types, you know, in the network space, you know, routers, switches, firewalls, and things like that. Yeah, there's just a lack of automation in general right now. And it's because for a variety of reasons, you know, in general, there's just been a lack of, I think, vendor support, to be honest. And I don't want to name names, but in general, there's just been a huge, huge focus on CLI and a lack of focus on how customers and users operate networks. While most of the focus has been around architecting, designing, and selling. And I say this because I've come from a world of advising customers. And I feel like even myself personally, over the past 10, 12, 15 years, there's just been a lot of focus on pushing boxes, where now personally my focus is day two. How do we do more with less? And that's really just eye-opening to say, you know, when you look at everyone out there, there's just a lack of focus in general that's helping users automate, operationalize, and again, plain and simple, do more with less.
Being the not network guy, I guess, in this particular show, I dabble. I grew up kind of always thinking the network was this smart thing that configured itself. I mean, if you think about it physically, it's the one thing in the data center that completely connects to every other device. Like all the devices are connected together. So I always thought that it was this automated kind of creature that lived in the data center. I know there are some things that are somewhat automated, like dynamic routing protocols and various ways to transmit the VLAN configuration between switches, but it sounds like that's not really getting the puck where we need to go. It's just the bare minimum to get a network operating.
Yeah, no, exactly. And the funny part about it is the commands that we use to configure networks haven't changed in a really, really long time. So even if we look at automating the existing, call it the legacy or traditional, those commands haven't changed. And as network engineers, we take pride in finding the fewest characters possible to type in a command. If you're going to assign a VLAN ID to a switch port, so you know you can do an SW space A space V 10 to assign VLAN 10 to an access port. And I remember studying for the CCIE where, you know, I purposely focused on speed and, you know, configuration for various reasons. But in general, I think that's just the mindset that everyone has had over the past decade or two. And it's just a matter of, you know, we really, really enjoyed knowing the commands to type in there to configure something. And we really didn't want to deviate from that, to go learn another mechanism. You know, if it was, again, Perl, Python, automation tooling, what have you, it was just we were happy doing what we were doing. And hey, if you have to deploy a VLAN or make an interface change across 20 closets on campus, hey, if you can do that in less time than the previous time, then kudos to you.
Open up 20 tabs on your terminal program and off you go. Jason, I would say it wasn't so much an unwillingness to learn other methods, although I think we're getting to that point today, maybe. But I mean, the past, there haven't been any other choices. What were you going to do? The way we were all taught was CLI. And what were your automation options? Some super expensive package that was really just running expect in the background or something like that. And so most of us just like, yeah, CLI is fine. I mean, it's not like there's been great alternatives.
No, you're dead on. And I see that more now than I did, you know, years ago, because, you know, you're right. When I look back now to see, you know, why it's been so hard, there's just been, you know, again, a lack of good interfaces from the devices. So we can blame the device and there's a lack of interfaces. I sort of agree on that. I'll save it for later. But in general, there's just been a lack of, I'll call it good tooling / good libraries. You know, if we picked a programming language or something and to say, well, you know, why didn't you use Python or something else? Well, does that mean every person has to write their own and roll their own to get started? And that would have been the case over the past several years. And larger organizations have done this, right? You know, so it's not like networks haven't been automated. It was just a large barrier to entry where we're seeing more folks get involved, call it in the vendor community, open source communities, to have more pre-packaged libraries and pre-built tools that make it more streamlined to get started. But yeah, I think you're right. When we look at the interfaces over the past couple of years, and if it was SSH, Telnet, SNMP, and things like that, and if you picked your favorite language, if it was, again, Perl, Python, Ruby, what have you, it just would have been a very difficult process to get started on the automation journey.
Well, I'll throw something else out here too, which is in my experience using some of the big packages you could buy that would allow you to push blocks of code or whatever. There was risk there. They didn't always work great. And if you screw up badly enough, you can fail catastrophically in a way that takes out the whole data center where you're not processing. And I think that makes a lot of people gun shy.
Yeah. But going back to the tools for a second, I think the tools are interesting because there have been tools that have been advertised as network automation tools, you know, in the past, and a lot of them are very, very expensive. When you look at, you know, some of these tools, you're talking, you know, it could have been, you know, I want to say seven figure price tags for a lot of these, even to deploy in a mid-size environment. And then if you're going to pay, you know, I'll even round down. Let's say you're going to invest a couple $100,000 for automation tooling. That's still a lot of money. And then for a lot of those tools, it was probably the same price for professional services dollars to get it installed. And then you need dedicated bodies to, exactly, you know, to maintain it, right?
Yep. Yeah, it wasn't as simply buying it and then off you go. It was this ongoing expense. And buying the package and spending huge amounts of dollars on it was always, in my experience, easier than getting a headcount. So if you did need that person to dedicate to the tool, that maybe wasn't going to happen. So you'd spend all this money for this expensive tool. You'd spend for the professional services to get it off the ground. You'd go through training so that people would learn how to use it. But the thing you really needed, that person to keep the tool running, you couldn't get. And so over time, the tool would end up being abandoned.
Yeah. And another to add on to that, over time, you know, you upgrade your devices. Next thing you know, you upgrade it and not support, you know, on the latest version of the tool, and there's compatibility issues. And yeah, and sure enough, lo and behold, then that tool that was so costly and they looked forward to getting ends up not being used. So it's unfortunate, but that's sort of what we've seen over the past several years.
How much do you think the fact that everybody's network is a snowflake in some way, unique, different from everybody else's network, how much has that impacted network automation as an industry thing?
Severely. And I'm still seeing that now. You know, one of the first things that I'm seeing now as a good entrance into network automation is just building proper templates to generate configurations to push to network devices. And I still hear it a lot out there where the response is, well, I can't actually template this. And you get in the conversation and it's like, well, that one router, we configured this for this reason, this other switch. that part of the network, we needed to deviate from our standard TML3 and, you know, tag VLAN down to that, you know, wire and closet switch, because this protocol used by our scanner system needs L2 connectivity between the speaker and IP speaker and something else. So it's just there's all these, you know, one-off changes that have happened that makes it extremely hard to build the proper, call it template, even to get started. And this is one of those things that is still a problem. And when I talk to customers now, this is one of the first things is, let's inventory the configurations to see what it's going to be like to create those proper templates to get started. Because when you look at what's been done over the past several years, and when we hear the term templates, as a network engineer, it's funny, you know, I'll say, and I've said this in Prezos over the past several years too, and I'll probably say it again. When we hear templates, network engineers think Word docs and Notepad files. And even when I was getting started, network engineers, I would hear scripts. I would always tell to, you know, say to the people more senior than me, I would say, would you mind emailing me that script? Because I was so intrigued to see how scripts were used on the network. And every time it was a Notepad text file or a Word doc. So I do think the Snowflake architecture has caused these problems with making things very difficult to begin the automation journey. And I think it starts on, because it is a journey, right? There isn't going to be a place that we get to, I think, in the short term. But even to get started, you know, it is difficult because if we have these, to bring it back to your comment on Snowflakes, I think that's a huge part of it.
Chris, I wanted to get your reaction on this because Jason and I are like commiserating because we've been here and lived through this. But you've been dealing with automation on the virtualization side and maybe the storage side. Are these similar stories, or is this like, holy crap, the world you're living in is awful?
It makes me wonder why you've been network engineers for as long as you have. Actually, I take that back. It tells me that you really love what you do and that you lived in a world where this is your thing. You love building these networks. You're good at it. And even with all of the technology kind of setbacks, maybe you just didn't realize it because that was your world. It wasn't like network engineers over in the west side of the country had these amazing tools and over on the east side of the country or in a different country, they didn't. This was just the state of the art. I guess as the rest of the world kind of moved forward to be abstracted away from the hardware and automated and things like that, maybe some folks only recently started popping their head up and saying, man, I'm kind of jealous of that. I want that. So yeah, it sounds like horrible and awesome at the same time.
Yeah, and one of the things that I really like as not being a native developer, again, I'm passionate about this. I do love this stuff. And transitioning from, call it network engineer, to a person who has gone full into software development. And again, I'll never be a professional developer, but call it, you know, network developer, person who's going to stitch together and communicate to both the developer and the network engineer on both sides. But I truly believe that, you know, the network engineers, or call them domain experts, because we can look at this sysadmin, you know, storage, compute, what have you. I really believe that I love it so much because I know why I'm doing this. We know why we're doing what we're doing because we have seen and felt the pain not to do this. Where, you know, if you come straight out of college and, or, you know, first job and you're automating networks, that's all you're going to know, which is great, but you wouldn't have really felt the pain on why you're doing it. And I really do believe in to feel good about what you're doing and to know why you're doing it. I think with network automation, those network engineers and the domain experts that dip their toe into scripting and to automation, I think they're going to see tremendous, tremendous value. You know, I've gotten emails recently and, you know, IMs and private messages on GChat, LinkedIn, Slack and whatnot. And it's just been, thank you so much. You know, my career has changed. And these are network people, right? These aren't developers. It's just providing some basic foundation. You know, I call it going from 0 to 60, because you see the why, because you felt that pain personally and that pain gradually goes away, which is really nice.
What an interesting conversation. And I'm thinking about other food groups in the data center. You know, my home for a long time was the compute, storage, and virtualization layer. Really, the ability to automate that stuff was a hook to entertain various compute and storage products. You know, that's really was the edge that one product had over the other. We were able to abstract away from the hardware resources with virtualization, so we became hungry for ways to be efficient and flexible. It feels to me like you just didn't have that advantage in the network world. You were very tied to whatever the hardware was, and therefore once you made that investment, it was a 7 to 10 year cycle. I remember seeing old 6509s with dust caked all over them that you just never replaced. So you didn't have the opportunity to iterate like the rest of the data center, and no one wanted to push code to it or anything. A little bit of a rant there, but it's just interesting to see how the network world has evolved.
A twofold problem. I mean, you hit on one. One is just the proprietary nature of various vendor platforms that go in. But then two, we were talking about snowflakes. And I asked Jason, do you really think snowflakes are a problem? And he agreed that, yeah, it's snowflakes. In other words, everybody's network being a little bit different from everybody else's is a problem. It does make it hard to automate. And maybe as network designers and as an industry, the way we train, maybe we can start moving towards some standardized architectures over time that would help ameliorate this problem. Our DataKnot sponsor today is IT Pro TV. With IT Pro TV, you gain access to the most important tools needed to prepare you for IT certification. They have a big library, over 1,000 hours of up-to-date, high-quality video content. They add new courses every week. Courses are streamed live and also on demand, and you can get them wherever you're at via just about whatever device you can imagine, including Chromecast, Roku, Fire TV, Apple TV, of course, your PC or your Mac, or your mobile device. And so we say certification. So what kind of courses are we talking about here? Well, they include CompTIA, Advanced Security Practitioner, CCNP Security, Microsoft Server 2016 MCSE, Ethical Hacking, Virtualization, Cryptography, Metasploit, and more. I mean, I went through this library, and there's lots and lots of Cisco-related stuff, VMware, and more. Learning the course material is good, but you also want to be able to test, practice things, verify that you're ready for the exam, and IT Pro TV gives you that as well. You get 100 step-by-step virtual machine labs and also Transcender practice exams, which is $109 value. And there is one low monthly subscription price for all of this, and if you decide after trying it you don't like it, there is a no-hassle cancellation policy. By the way, if you're maybe a manager or you represent a group of people that might want to do IT Pro TV, you can do that. There is corporate group pricing, and companies that have done that include Harvard, MIT, UCSD, Stanford, and others. So check out itprotv/datanauts to upgrade your brain with the most popular IT certifications. Premium subscriptions are normally $57 a month or $570 per year, but we have a special offer. You can try it free for 7 days when you sign up using our code datanauts30 to check out their courses, live stream, and more, and you'll also receive 30% off the lifetime of your account. That is less than $40 per month or $399 for the entire year. Just visit itpro.tv/datanauts, use the code at datanauts30, and try it free for 7 days, plus save 30% off the life of your account.
All right, you two, we've had a great tour down memory lane of the misery and pain, but let's talk about the fact that it is getting better. At least that's why we have Jason on the show, because I've been reading a lot of the content that you put out there around automation and the tooling, and it seems like there's just a mushroom cloud of awesome exploding into the network world. So the first thing I wanted to tickle your brain about was interfaces. I think we talked about that a little bit earlier. Ethan's pretty down on it. You said maybe you want to comment on it later. So let's talk about your experience with interfaces to start automating networks.
Yes. So interfaces have gotten better. They're getting better. They'll continue to get better. So I think this is going to be a journey on the vendor side as well. Those who are providing interfaces to consumers like ourselves. And in general, we can look at platforms across the board. We can look at, I'll name two now because they're very similar. And if we look at Nexus, NX API, and Arista's eAPI, both very similar. I believe that they're great getting started APIs for network engineers because they still leverage commands. And you'll hear a lot of folks say, well, they're terrible because they're using commands. But at the same time, it makes it easier to get started with the API because it's still using something we know.
Just to qualify that, Jason, you're talking about the APIs where what you're really doing is passing through a command line command that we're familiar with from typing at the CLI, only you're doing it in a RESTful way.
Exactly. So Ethan, you're right. So in general, what I'm saying is we're now going to take this command we would execute via SSH. So think of communication mechanisms, command over SSH. So now we're going to send command over some other means. And one of those means could be a RESTful API. When we hear REST, let's just think about a web-based API. So over HTTP, we're going to send a command to a device. But the great thing about it is coming back to us now is going to be some sort of structured data, where when we used SSH in the past, it would be SSH to the device, CLI command in, then it would be a large string back. Then we have to parse that string to figure out the data that we want to parse, you know, out of that string, right? If it's counters, we'd have to now manually figure out to use regular expressions and things like that, CRC errors, jumbo frames, giants, and things like that. But now when we still do CLI to the device, we're going to get back structured data. This is where things like maybe key value pairs come in or JSON comes in. So this is just the data format. We're now getting the response in, and there's no more parsing that has to happen. Everything is pre-structured coming from the device. So this is why, again, APIs like NXAPI from Nexus or from Cisco and then Arista's eAPI are good, because they're doing commands and structured data coming back. And now our scripts and programs can intelligently use that data to perform some other action.
Because we get the data back, we can pop it into a string and then act on it without having to get this big blob of text that we got to parse through, hope we get the right chunk pulled out of there and then do something with it. We know what we're getting back because it's coming back to us, as you said, in that structured way.
Exactly. We're eliminating a step where we have to parse the raw string and create our strings, our lists and dictionaries or hashes, you know, whatever you want to call them, right? We're eliminating that step so the vendor now is going to return back a full-blown structured object to us, which is why I like these APIs, because they're still leveraging commands to the device. So from a network perspective, this is a great entry-level API to start using, because, you know, in the future, and other APIs, well, not future, they exist today as well, it's going to be an object to and froms, and commands will mean nothing. And I believe when that happens, right, it will be still more of a learning curve. So I would look to some of these newer APIs, maybe not as robust as they will be in 3 years from now, but again, they're great getting started APIs.
I think you hit it right there. I love the fact that you're talking about objects. That's really the enabler that I've found working with APIs outside of the network world is, give me an object, allow me to pour logic on it, allow me to unit test it, do integration testing, just really be able to do anything I want with an object and know that I can validate the data. I can be assured that it's going to be in a particular structure. Or if it's not, I can throw it back and say it's wrong, rather than just, like you were talking about earlier, scraping some kind of string and having to serialize it. And if you're listening and you don't know these terms, these are good things to go look up. You know, what is serialization? What is an object? That kind of thing. It's certainly relevant in this world, because that's the lingo. You know, that's how you get this data in and then decide what to do with it. It's great that we're talking about doing that for network engineering. So it sounds like prior to that, really the best effort was screen scraping device of some sort, and then a regex, sacrifice a chicken and hope that the bones are thrown correctly to get the data out of it.
Yeah, that was the best way. And in general, people got it done, but those were the, again, larger carriers of the world and larger enterprises. And I think if we look at this as building blocks, right, because this is what we're seeing, is we have these APIs, we have these interfaces to get to the device. And we can say, you know what, great API, crappy API, bad interface, you know, whatever it is. Like, the building block is then, how do we abstract away these underlying API calls? Not everybody should, you know, worry about these lower level API calls, no matter what API is being used. If it's, I'm not even going to name names, you know, I'll just call it API of the day. It's funny. So as we you know, build on this and go from APIs, objects, the next phase is, well, writing a lot of the same code, just like we were writing a lot of the same commands, but we never fixed that problem 5 years ago, but we see the same API requests being made. So why don't we abstract that out a little bit and create maybe a library in Python or whatever language you want to use to make it easier for everyone to consume these APIs. So it's funny, you know, right now there's several libraries out there that exist, and specifically looking at Python, we can look at, you know, NetMiko as an example. We can look at, you know, Arista's PyEAPI. There's one from PyCisco as an example. Once you start consuming a library, and even Napalm's another one, I would say those few are, you know, great to look at. We look at things like, you know, NetMiko and Napalm and PyEAPI. When you start using these Python libraries, and they were built for network engineer / developer to quickly pick up and to automate their environment, you really, at that point, don't even see how your library or your code is connecting to the device. So I will say, you know, once a library is built, the automator at this point could worry less about the underlying transport mechanism. Not to say we shouldn't, you know, we shouldn't demand better from the vendors, but in general, I wouldn't use the excuse there's no API in the device to start automating, because there's better and better libraries that are coming out that will streamline the process to get started automating certain device types.
So Jason, I'm thinking around the tooling you're talking about and the automation, and I'm curious, does that ability to automate and kind of package up network configuration help or assist with design and architecture at all, or is it just no real effect there?
No, it does. I'm going to continue with these building blocks. I think it's important to kind of continue along this path. I'm going to go one step back. When we look at these APIs, look at libraries, you know, the next step is tools that use these libraries, because you can see how along this path to automate an environment, you don't necessarily have to be a programmer at all. You can leverage a tool like Ansible that I talked about tremendously and really do like for network automation. And so when you look at integrating these tools into an environment to automate, does it impact the design architecture? Absolutely. Because when you start looking at these things at a more abstract level, you think twice about enabling these. It could be one-off features. It could be proprietary features. It really depends on the environment and the design. But in general, you start thinking differently and you start thinking about from the design process, you know, how do we just standardize this design? You know, how do we simplify the architecture and deploy the same, I'll say command set, the same architecture design command set across our environment? And we're not thinking, well, you know, that one router needs that BGP configuration. This one needs this configuration. You really start thinking more holistically about your environment, because you're thinking about the associated tooling that you're going to use and that you use to operate, manage, and deploy that same environment.
Yeah, I think there's projects that are starting to address this as well. If you look at folks that are trying to go cloud native, they're trying to build a predictable data center that is supporting apps in a cloud native kind of way. You end up with things like Project Calico and the Romana project that are trying to come up with ways to deal with simple things like IP addressing and routing in a very standardized, predictable way. Of course, that only really works in the data center. It gets complicated as soon as you spread out. But I think there is a recognition along the way that we don't all have to build something different and unique. As much as we can standardize, the better. And that plays right into the hand of automation really well.
Yeah, and you mentioned those platforms, and I can't claim to be experts in Calico and Romano. I've heard some podcasts on them and done some research. You know, sounds great. Again, cloud native, great. Where the vision is, where we're going as an industry, and those solutions will natively automate the interconnectivity, you know, of the network, right, for those containers and whatnot. But even keeping it practical, you know, it's funny when we look at OpenStack and, you know, there could be a cloud platform like vRealize, pick your favorite one. There's still so many other networks that exist in an environment, because there's a lot of these excuses. Well, you know, we don't have to do it because this is why we're deploying solution A, B, or C. Well, there's still the day-to-day management of the platforms, right? Even in the data center, you still want to manage SNMP and AAA and things like that. You want to do image upgrades. You still want to have simplified ways to do that. On top of that, you know, we have these things called campus networks and wireless networks and DMZ. Mm-hmm. You know, there's all these networks that exist out there, but it's just the nature of the industry over the past, call it year, two, 3 years. A lot of the automation story and conversation has been in the data center, but we should not forget the networks we've operated. And largely, even in my career as a network engineer, a lot of them were non-data center based because there were a lot of branch sites and a lot of larger campuses and headquarters, right? So in general, you know, as those cloud platforms and cloud native networking solutions emerge, there's still a lot of other places where I'll call it simplified network operations is mandatory.
Jason, I think a lot of what you're talking about is exactly true. And I think we're seeing modeling the network in different aspects of the network. So you've got kind of a standard way to interact with the network is coming on strong, and it's going to address not just the data center, but all of those areas. Do you have a take on that?
I do. Yeah, yeah. I've taken all of this stuff. I appreciate the question. But no, in general, I do. And it's interesting. So I've talked to some of the guys at OpenConfig. You know, it's funny. I wrote a blog post about OpenConfig a few months back and caught some eyes. And it's interesting because when we go back to look at, take a step, you know, a small step back, you know, CLI to API, we're using APIs, using libraries, great. Even though we're getting structured data back from a device in whatever format the vendor gives it to us in, call it XML or JSON or whatever, you know, whatever format it is, if it's not in a standardized data model, there still needs to be some sort of normalization. You know, right now, I perform that normalization for a lot of code that I write. Is it a big deal? No, but you know, it is a pain. And when we look at standard data models like OpenConfig, which is writing Yang models, right? So OpenConfig is writing Yang models, IETF is writing Yang models. So it's been one of those pseudo standards with how to write data models for networking. That way, when we say, hey, you know, get me the operational state or configure this object or what have you, you know, we're still calling things the same thing between vendors because, you know, to configure BGP, you know, we need an ASN, we need neighbors, right? We need some common things that haven't changed in years. That being said, I think those things are phenomenal. And I really, really do hope those modeling standards that are vendor independent take off and conquer the world. I really do. But in the meantime, when we look at a tool, I'll say Ansible, I mentioned it earlier, they allow you to create, I'll say, your own data model, right? Which is nice because you would define your own data model that would take data from what you're going to store in your data model and push it to a device, push it via some means. And the great thing is you could define what BGP means for you. What attributes do you want to configure? What policies do you want to configure? Are you going to configure ACLs in your campus environment? Do you deploy Cisco ASAs, Palo Altos, and Juniper SRXs? Well, great. You can now have a common means to model an ACL for your environment. And there needs to be a shim layer, you know, for each one. But at the same time, you can visualize that common data model. You would build that little shim translation once. And the great thing is, going forward, if you want to add another ACL, you want to add another VLAN, all you have to do now is change that in your, I'll call it here, you know, YAML file. So this is, you know, a way to write structured data in a human readable format, both machine readable and human readable, where you control that. And I do believe you can even model that in YAML following the OpenConfig or some given Yang model if you so choose. But if you did not want to do that, you can still model a VLAN. I'll give you an example with VLAN. You can configure VLAN name, VLAN ID, VLAN state on a few different vendors. I worked on HPE Gear, Commodore switches recently. They have a description for VLAN. Cisco also has administrative state and VLAN state. Arista just has admin state for VLAN. So you see all these little caveats. So you have to think about, well, how could you model a VLAN that works across all three of those vendors? Even the term data modeling has been a bit vague over the past couple of years. Everyone throws these terms around. But in general, it's just a matter of figuring out what the thing is you want to configure or how the data should look, what you want to get back, stats, counters, ephemeral data, and things like that. And at this point, you could model it how you want to model it for your environment, and then over time transition to a vendor neutral model, such as OpenConfig Yang models, as an example.
Yeah, you mentioned Ansible as your tool of choice for this, which has got an open source flavor, then a commercial flavor, and then another commercial tool that I'm aware of that is this sort of thinking, modeling, and then pushing changes towards a model, getting result sets back that you've defined and so on in a template-driven way is Glue Networks. That is their Glueware orchestration engine that specializes in SD-WAN right now, but you could make it do anything you want to in your environment. And that's their thinking too. So there is thinking like this in the industry, which is kind of encouraging.
Yeah, the best one out there that I thought you were going to mention actually was TailF, right? That was model-driven.
Oh, sure. Right, of course. Yeah. The Cisco acquisition.
And you know, great acquisition, you know, great product. I've been fairly transparent about it. I, you know, with my work in the open source community, you know, really around Ansible, I would love to see more to deliver something like an open source, I'll call it ish, version of TailF. And I think when we look at the integration of a few projects, I'll point out Napalm as a project, and I use Napalm through Ansible. So you can actually, if you wanted to, just look at Ansible as the tool driving configuration. And this is based on some of the support based on the device vendors, but you can model your configuration out in some data model that you would define yourself using Ansible. Then you would push that configuration to a device and leveraging the intelligence of the device. This could even be iOS. This could be Arista EOS, this could be iOS XR, this could be any number of device platforms, and you model it out, push it to a device, get the diffs first. You know, do you want to apply the configuration part of a pipeline? Diffs look good, great push. But at the same time, you know, in general though, it does go back to, you know, those platforms like a Glue and a TailF, great platforms. You know, again, and a lot of the folks, you know, right now in the market looking at automation are looking at some of these lower cost open source tools. So this is where we have tools like Ansible really, really kind of fitting in and providing, you know, great solutions low entry to get started, and you can really start automating networks with a tool like Ansible, and I'll say no joke, in a matter of minutes.
One of the big things that got me excited here was talking with Jason about APIs, and he mentioned that even though the APIs are kind of almost transitional in a way, where we're feeding in commands, we used to feed in at the command line, now we're feeding them in through an API call, what we're getting back is structured data. We're not just getting back a raw bunch of text that we got to parse through. We're getting back actual numbers in a meaningful field, structured in a way that we know what this number is and then can act on it in a useful way without having to figure out what it is first. That is great because for a programmer, for a developer, that's critical. Chris, what did you take away?
I was looking more at the idea of baking the architecture for a network into a configuration file, something declarative, maybe the modeling we were talking about. And that seemed pretty cool. I remember having to download like the validated designs, and every person had their own kind of flavor to add to a network design. It just made it everywhere I went, it was different and dramatically different. And if we could put that into some kind of more declarative config file, much like I did working with VMware NSX, making it so that it was just this repeatable chunk of network that you deployed, it seems that it would make things vastly simplified, repeatable, and you could iterate upon the work done in the design to make it better over time.
Jason, I think a good way to conclude this podcast is to talk about how you can get a handle on all this stuff. Because if you're a traditional network engineer, there is no obvious path. I mean, Cisco's starting to bring some of these things into their training, and you hear about it from the Juniper folks a little bit, but it's not like, I'm going to go be a network automation engineer today, and here's the right books, and here's the courses I can take. Off I go. It's harder than that. How the heck did you learn all this stuff when there wasn't a clear path to follow?
Yeah, it's a really good question. And in this part of the show, I may have some plugs of my own, so I apologize, but it has to be done.
Brag on yourself, my friend. That's why you're here.
Good content is good content. Yeah.
But in general, I do believe it starts with saying, I want to learn this stuff and to pick a project out. And I would say for me personally, I can look back to say, you know, how did I get started? It was to build a mini config generator. And all it was putting in config stuff in an Excel file. It was row per device, column per feature or something, you know, VLANs or what have you. And then, you know, just figuring out, how do I communicate now to the Excel file and code? How do I open it? How do I then read that in and then create commands to a file? So that was a cool project, you know, spent some time on that. And then in general, where it really took off was from there was Cisco announced 1PK several years ago. 1PK, I believe, has been sort of end of life. But in general, when they first announced it, it was great. You know, it's going to be this de facto way to interface to multiple platforms from Cisco, different libraries, C, Java, and Python. And it was just, wow, you know, it was just, let me dive in here. And again, you know, the account reps from Cisco were great. You know, they ended up punting me to, you know, some specialists and gave me some quality time to dive in. And then from there, it was just one thing led to the next and landed on Ansible shortly after. And I think Ansible is a great, great learning platform. Aside with what it can do for production environments, I truly believe that Ansible is a great learning platform because to use Ansible, you write playbooks, and playbooks consist of plays, which consist of tasks, which are things you want to automate. To write a playbook, you have to use YAML. And then when you're going to automate a task, you actually get JSON data back, right? So you're getting the structured data back, looking at what key value pairs are. And then from there, really thinking about things holistically. And then you hear about different technologies and templating and things like Jinja 2. And Ansible really brings all that together from a learning perspective. So in general, I would say pick something that you want to do, even if it's automating collecting data. If you don't want to push something just yet, you know, how do you go to 3 or 4 devices and, you know, do a show VLAN and get the VLANs on a device, perform a task, you know, go do it. At the same time, as far as content material, you know, blogs, I would say there's some, you know, great blogs out there, and, you know, walk through the thought process of automation. And even, you know, Chris, right, a lot of PowerShell stuff, right? It doesn't really matter what you're using, you know, it could be PowerShell or Python or Ruby, just look at, you know, the mindset of automating environment. So I'll start with those two things is really, you know, start with, you know, vendor independent blogs and start with trying to find one thing that can make an impact to, you know, to your day-to-day life as an operator and try to automate it. I would start there.
Yeah, that sounds fair. I mean, it's a similar journey that I went through with VMware's NSX product, being that you didn't have a super deep network background when it came to layer 3 and routing and things like that, but I understood the basics a little bit and understood automation a little bit, so decided to really just start writing some projects using the language I knew, which happened to be PowerShell. And it was really just an exploratory adventure of building out an environment that was non-prod. And like you said, at first I started getting data just because I didn't want to blow anything up and saw what I could do with that. And then slowly, one command at a time, started building stuff until I think a month later I look back and I'm like, holy crap, I've just built the end-to-end stack to build out an entire NSX topology.
Right.
It was not pretty because I was kind of learning the code on the fly and I wasn't too worried about anyone else using it. But then I'm like, okay, cool, now I know how to do it. Let me go back and do it right and make it so that someone else could do it. So I think having that goal in mind is definitely the right mindset, Jason.
Yeah, and like you said, you'd go back and optimize it maybe or refactor it, and that's key. I tell people all the time in the network space, you know, don't worry about what your code looks like. I can look at code that I wrote 2 years ago, and it is terrible. That mentality is never going to go away because we're always continuously learning, or at least I hope we are. That is so key to get your code working. You know, go back, refactor it, and you can refactor it, optimize it every week, every day, you know, should you choose. I wouldn't let what it looks like stop somebody from learning how to code. And the same could be said, I'll bring it back to Ansible, the same could be said for using a tool, even Ansible. You might see the same task being done 3 or 4 times in a row. Just like in code, you can do something like a loop in Ansible. You can iterate through items, right? If you want to configure VLANs, you don't want to have to call the VLAN module 5 times. Well, let's create a list or iterate through something to do it. So it's part of that mindset change where, you know, the most important thing is start that journey. And, you know, in general, you know, we can look at the general skill sets that are changing when you look at automation. And we didn't talk about Linux at all. Again, I'm always transparent about this stuff. You know, I'll always say no expert in a lot of this stuff, although I'm doing it a lot daily. But Linux is a great, great enabler, I would say, if you're going to, you know, start down this path. And if you're a Windows person like myself, to download VirtualBox or some sort of hypervisor on your desktop, and, you know, boot up a Linux VM, Ubuntu or something.
I mean, it sounds like I can do this really cheaply then. I mean, is this the lab infrastructure you'd recommend to get started? Just something as simple as that?
And don't be ashamed of Windows. Come on. We got to stand together.
Don't be ashamed of yourself either. Enough with your imposter syndrome. I deny it. You are the expert. It's why you're here.
No, yes, I would. Right. So even, you know, right now, as a Windows person, I am in my Linux VM most of the day, all day, right? It's all the code that I do is in there. Again, if you're using some of that fruit, that Apple thing, you know, one of those Apple machines.
Oh, man.
You don't have to do it. It could help, right, for, you know, predictability if you want to, you know, build, you know, pre-build certain environments repeatable and multiple times over and over again for others to use. But at the same time, yeah, all you need is a single virtual machine, right? Get Linux going, and at the same time, I would start using, you know, some sort of tool and programming language of choice in that virtual machine, because in general, we're just seeing more and more talk of APIs, automation, and Linux, you know, in the network space. So on that note, I'm going to mention, because I know we're talking about, you know, enablers and helping people learn, I will say I am part of a phenomenal team that is co-authoring a book that is due out shortly.
Yeah, it's the O'Reilly book, right?
O'Reilly book, exactly, exactly. So I'm working with Matt Oswalt and Scott Lowe. I'm writing this book. And again, it tackles a lot of these concepts. And it goes through sort of like these building blocks I was mentioning earlier, kind of start with, you know, some of the challenges, what APIs are, different kinds of APIs. We go into Linux, we go into Python, we go into different API types on different network vendors from, you know, Cisco, Juniper, Arista, just to name a few. And then we'll look at, you know, how to do templating, and we'll look at continuous integration and DevOps, and just, you know, what all this means for the network engineer. And we're really trying to, you know, make this a great getting started guide for network engineers looking to ramp their skill set, you know, to be really powerful, you know, in their careers going forward.
Now, besides that book, you've got a class you offer, right? Or something like that?
Yeah. I forgot to mention this early in the intro. Yeah, so right now, you know, where I work, you know, we offer a lot of services for network automation. But one of the things that we do also is provide instructor-led training, as well as, you know, WebEx or online as well. But we do a 3- and a 4-day course for Narco Automation, and it covers a lot of these same things. And, you know, they, a lot of times we're doing private courses for larger shops as well as public courses. And we cover a lot of the same things. You know, how do we use Ansible to automate Cisco, Arista, Juniper, Palo Alto firewalls? But at the same time, you know, we cover both ends of the spectrum, right? How do you use raw Python and how do you use Ansible to automate the environment? And I want to point out too, you know, we talked about config management quite a bit. And one of the things that I love about the course is, you know, we spend, you know, a good amount of time on just data collection, gathering and reporting, where you can generate an inventory report in a matter of seconds. And the point there is to show that network automation is a lot more than config management. Because a lot of the feedback has been, well, you know, a lot of the environments are small. Doesn't matter if it's an SSH into 5 devices. So in general, you know, it's more than that because we could collect data, you know, gather data. And on top of that, when you do implement some sort of automation mechanism, you know, there is that notion of repeatability, predictability, and being able to go back to the business and to more confidently say this is going to go off right without a hitch, or at least minimize the risk in there. Versus, you know what, you know, VLAN ID is really, it's literally only 6 characters, VLAN, well, space ID, 7 plus an integer. At the same time, you could fat finger something. And so automation is just brings a lot more to the table than just doing things faster.
Well, Jason, how can people follow you? How can they find more information about your company? Any URLs you want to share?
Yeah, so personal blog is jedelman.com. On Twitter, jedelman8. As a company, as a community, we launched a open Slack team, and there's over a dozen channels right now. At this point, it's really community driven. I just happen to be the one to create it. But you can go to networktocode.slack.com, self sign up, and there's channels on Ansible, there's channels on NetMiko and Napalm, and you know, there are a lot of folks in there, you know, getting started. You know, we started this a few months back, and I believe now we're up to about 400 plus people that are signed up actively.
It got to the point where I couldn't keep up with it. It started slow and it just took off. Yeah. Slack is the new IRC. Networktocode.slack.com.
Exactly. I'll be at Interop coming up in a few weeks doing some stuff out there on network automation. The one thing I wanted to offer too is, as a company, we're launching a on-demand sandbox service where, you know, one of the barriers to entry to network automation right now is access to gear. Nexus has an API. ACI has an API, or what, you know, they all have APIs.
Yeah, but who's got that equipment sitting at home?
Who has it at home? At the same time, even if you have a hypervisor like VirtualBox on your laptop, you can maybe download and get 1 or 2 VMs going, which is great to get started. But what if you want to really simulate if it's, again, 2, 4, 8, 10 different VMs in a given environment across vendors from Juniper to Cumulus to Cisco, Arista, what have you? So we're launching an on-demand service where you, you know, come to the website, self-service. Hey, you know, I want to spin up a Juniper VMX, you know, 5-node topology, and within 10 minutes it gets spun up. So you can think of it as almost AWS for networking. And then along with that, we don't have labs per se, but we're going to have tutorials with how do you use Juniper's PyEasy library to configure VMX? You know, how do you use Ansible to automate Arista and things like that? So this is going to be on-demand networks. 10 minutes can spin up 1 node or 100 nodes because we're leveraging public cloud and there's infinite scale.
Now, you got a site built out for this already, or should we just follow you on Twitter for like a big announcement?
You can go to labs.networktocode.com. I am going to offer free sandbox environments for the first 100 listeners who email me at labs@networktocode.com. We're going to offer up some free sandbox environments. So if you're a listener, you want to get started, email us at labs@networktocode.com and let us know what you want to test, what vendor, and we'll do our best to get you at least 1 or 2 nodes for a couple hours to spin up. That way you can do some walkthroughs with, you know, how do you leverage some tools like Puppet, Ansible, or, you know, and or Python to automate, you know, some of your favorite gear.
Wow, that's pretty awesome. First 100 people. All right. Say that email address one more time.
The email is labs@networktocode.com, and that's T-O. So networktocode.com.
Got it. Well, it's only 99 now because I just emailed you. So sorry, everyone. Team advantage. I'm kidding.
Well, that's a good place to end our show. And so that, folks, concludes today's DataNauts podcast. You can reach me at EC Banks on Twitter, and my blog is ethancbanks.com. Chris is at Chris Wall on Twitter, and his blog is wallnetwork.com. For more timely and technical Datanauts podcasts, aim your intergalactic two-way transceiver towards the Milky Way galaxy and tune in packetpushers.net. We send our data center infrastructure signal through the universe via wormholes that avoid that pesky speed of light delay, so you'll never have to wait for an episode. Sorry, multiverse residents, licensing is just too darn expensive. But if you're in our universe and listen to the Datanauts while blasting through hyperspace in your aluminum falcon, give us a review on iTunes or a shout out to Datanauts_show on Twitter. We appreciate the love. Until then, may your server lights blink, your storage spindles spin, and your cables be cleanly managed.
Wait, is that on the show, or you guys, is that an aside?
Of course you do. He's a professional.
Did you just say that with a country accent? Are you making fun of my Texan place of living?
Your illnesses are nothing I would mock.
Wait, what? And that's the show.
Woohoo!